Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with UConn's newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn's student-run television station, UCTV. Husky Nation News is a broadcast that informs the public about recent news and events within the UConn area. It will include original reports from the WHUS news staff, The Daily Campus, and news packages from UCTV. In the second half of this show today, I will sit down with UConn administrators, students, or faculty to discuss relevant topics that arise throughout the coming weeks. On Weeks There Is Not an Interview, an episode from one of the Talk Task Force members will be included instead. I'm your host, Katie Service, and this is a recap of all of the news from the University of Connecticut from this past week. UConn Mechanical Engineering Professor Jason Lee spent 45 days in space this past summer studying the physiological and psychological effects crew members endure during long-duration space missions. Lee participated in an analog mission, which can be described as a field test in locations that have physical similarities to the extreme space environments. The entire goal of these missions is to test new technologies and human behavior in harsh conditions before they are sent into space. Throughout the simulation, Lee lived in a 650-square-foot capsule at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, with three crew members he'd never met before. The crew followed structured daily routines and took part in various team-based activities that simulated emergencies astronauts might encounter while in space. Throughout the mission, each crew member wore a heart rate monitor that recorded stress levels and the physical effects of stress on each individual. Lee found looking at the heart rate monitors and practicing breathing exercises could help reduce those levels. Following this experience, Lee has expressed his interest in integrating similar team and communication-based activities into his classes here at UConn. If you're looking for a time capsule of physical video memorabilia, you might find it in Hamden, Connecticut. The Best Video Film and Cultural Center has kept alive the spirit of independent video stores and has become a haven for the physical media niche. On October 19th, the store was filled with vendors selling antiquated video formats, movie guides, and various other items for National Video Rental Store Day. Vendor Joe Fay was selling VHS tapes, DVDs, and horror magazines at the event and mentioned that the appeal of physical media in the age of streaming has a bit of a nostalgia factor. According to the Recording Industry Association of America, vinyl record sales were at $43.2 million in 2023, up from less than $1 million in 2006, showing the increasing interest in physical media. An update on a report from the Daily Campus's Liliana French from last week, UConn police officers arrested two UConn students following their reenactment of a TikTok video that was going viral that depicted one student yelling commands while holding a black cell phone with both hands, and the other student recording the video from his cell phone, contributing to the yelling. Both individuals have been charged with one count each of conspiracy to commit threatening in the first degree and breach of peace in the second degree, according to reports from the Daily Campus's Azia Shakah. No one was injured in the incident and no dangerous items were present, according to UConn police. Due to the charge of first-degree conspiracy to commit threatening, each student's bond amount was determined to be $50,000. Both are scheduled to appear in Rockville Superior Court on Thursday, November 21st. UConn's planetarium has been renamed in honor of the university's first female physics professor, Cynthia Wenth Peterson. The planetarium was originally built in 1954, but sat vacant until 2016 when Professor Matthew Guirathe spearheaded the restoration efforts. The renovations to the structure began in the early months of 2023 and continued for about a year and a half until its soft opening this past summer, according to reports by the Daily Campus's Gabriel Dunafee. The University of Connecticut is set to raise its general university fee by $98, and the Student Activity and Service Fee Advisory Committee, otherwise known as SASVACT, is reviewing how the additional funds will be allocated. At the first of the two budget hearings on November 14th, several departments presented their funding needs, according to reports by the Daily Campus's Patrick Boots. The Yukon Athletic Bands program, which includes the marching band and pep bands, is requesting an additional $65,000 to cover staffing and maintenance costs. The One Card Office, which manages student ID cards and Husky Bucks, is seeking more funding due to rising costs and plans to expand the use of Husky Bucks for Grubhub orders. The Student Activities Department expressed concerns about sustaining its programs such as Homecoming and Huskython without additional funding for the 2027 fiscal year. The Jorgensen Center for the Performing Arts is asking for $112,000 to cover staff and faculty costs as it becomes more popular for student events. The second budget hearing will be held on November 19th, focusing on funding for athletics, student health services, and other campus resources. Thanks for listening to Husky Nation News. We'll be right back with your weather forecast.
UConn's Rainbow Center has been serving UConn's diverse communities of gender identities, gender expressions, and sexuality since 1998. The fun and amazing staff provides resources and services to the wider campus community of students, faculty, staff, and local residents. Additional information about involvement opportunities with the Rainbow Center is available at rainbowcenter.ucon.edu. This message is brought to you by WHUS Stores.
Did you know that many in our town spend over 10% of their household income to heat their home and over 30% on rent? Heating costs are predicted to increase again in 2025, and local rents are already soaring, overwhelming family budgets. Join the Windham Area Interfaith Ministries annual Walk for Warmth on Sunday, November 24th at 2:15 p.m. This event will be held at the First Congregational Church of Willimantic on Valley Street in Willimantic, Connecticut. The event will raise money for energy, rental assistance, and basic needs, and will also help people in need. The walk will be preceded by an interfaith Thanksgiving service at 1:30 p.m. Register online at waimct.org/walkforwarmth or call 860-456-7270. Let's help all our neighbors stay warm this winter with the Walk for Warmth. This message has been brought to you by WHUS Stores.
Welcome back to Husky Nation News. Here's your weather forecast for today, Tuesday, November 19th. This morning, you can expect sunny skies with a high of about 58 degrees. There will also be gusts of wind throughout the day, reaching a high of 23 miles per hour. Tonight, you can expect mostly clear skies with a low around 31 degrees, according to the National Weather Service. Stick around. We'll be right back with more Husky Nation News.
Guess what?
What?
That's right, the Mansfield Library Express and Maple Road Branch Library are open to the public. The Mansfield Library Express, located at 23 Royce Circle, is open from Mondays to Fridays, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Maple Road Branch Library at 303 Maple Road is open Mondays to Fridays, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. For more information, visit mansfieldct.gov. You're listening to WHUS Stores. Established in 2004, the Valley Community Foundation distributes $1.6 million in grants each year to support the local nonprofit sector and the people it serves. VCF works in strong partnership with the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven to promote philanthropy in Ansonia, Derby, Oxford, Seymour, and Shelton, and receives a majority of its discretionary funding as a result of the Gates Fund and other preference funds at TCF that benefit the Valley. To learn how your gifts of cash, life insurance, appreciated stocks, bonds, real estate, and other assets can help to support the quality of life in the Valley, please visit the website at www.valleyfoundation.org. Or contact VCF President Sharon Closius at sclosius@valleyfoundation.org or 203-751-9162. You're listening to WHUS Stores.
Welcome back to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Today we're going to be kicking off a new segment of Husky Nation News. Unfortunately, I have not figured out a name for this new segment, but what we will be doing here is discussing all of the UConn Athletic games and kind of recap last week's athletics and preview this week's athletics and what's going on here on the UConn Stores campus. Now, I bet many of you are familiar with all of our department heads here at WHS Radio, but if you aren't, I am going to be introducing you to our talk director, Nashawn Livingston, who will be giving a report today on what has been happening in UConn athletics.
Hi everyone, I'm Nashawn Livingston, the talk director for WHUS, and I'm here to update you on recent news surrounding UConn athletics. Connecticut has been on a roll with a variety of its sports, starting with the UConn field hockey and women's soccer teams winning their respective Big East championships. The third nationally ranked UConn field hockey team brought home gold back to Stores last week after defeating the Temple Owls in the Big East champion game in Providence, Rhode Island, final score 0-1. The UConn women's soccer team shocked the soccer world after making an improbable run to the Big East championship as the 5 seed in the conference standings. After defeating the Creighton Blue Jays in the opening round, the Huskies made their way to Annapolis, Maryland, where they pulled off not one, but two upsets, shutting out the reigning Big East champions, the Georgetown Hoyas, and then defeating the second-seeded Xavier Musketeers in a thrilling double overtime victory. Elena Taylor decided the game with a goal in the 109th minute. After receiving the automatic bid to the NCAA Women's Soccer Tournament, the Huskies continued their upset tour by defeating the 6th nationally ranked Rutgers Scarlet Knights in Piscataway, New Jersey. This was UConn's first win in the NCAA tournament since their last appearance in 2016 and will now advance to the second round to battle the Stanford Cardinal in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Now for some crazy news, UConn football achieves its first winning record in 14 years. Yes, you heard me right. The Connecticut Huskies have attained their first winning season since 2010 after a comeback victory over the UAB Blazers in Birmingham, Alabama. Down 17 at the half without scoring a single touchdown at that point, the Huskies were able to escape Birmingham with another victory with help from backup quarterback Joe Fagnano. This will be UConn's second bowl-eligible season in 3 years under head coach Jim Mora's tenure. UConn's last bowl-eligible season prior to Morrow's arrival was back in 2015, where they ended the season 6-7. UConn has two remaining games in which it looks to finish the season 9-3, tying its FBS season win record back from 2007. It heads to Syracuse this Saturday, November 23rd, and will close out the season at UMass on November 30th. And now for some other UConn sports highlights. The UConn volleyball team closed out the regular season with a 3-0 shutout of Xavier, improving its home record to 14-1. The men's hockey team defeated the second nationally ranked Boston College Eagles at Toscano this past weekend, 5-4, and arguably the largest hockey upset of the week. UConn looks to create a win streak as it travels up to UMass Lowell for some more Hockey East play. The women's hockey team also came out of the weekend with a win. Ranked 14th in the nation, the team successfully swept the Merrimack Warriors in a weekend series. The Huskies will look to keep their win streak going as they travel up to Massachusetts again to face Boston College. And of course, I cannot forget, UConn basketball is back! It is the most wonderful time of the year, as Monday, November 6th marked the beginning of college basketball season, although it wouldn't reach the basketball capital of the world until 2 days later, when the UConn men's basketball team opened up its season against the Sacred Heart Pioneers in winning and dominant fashion. Excitement was in the air as students rushed into Gamble Pavilion to watch the two-time defending national champions. The Huskies closed out last season on a beautiful note as the number one overall seed, dominating the Purdue Boilermakers on their way to their second consecutive national title and sixth overall. This year's squad saw a lot of change, losing 4 out of 5 starters and bringing in 5 new faces, including 5-star freshman Liam McNeely and Michigan transfer center Terrace Reed Jr. The team will be led by the one remaining starter from last year's roster, Alex Caravan. Connecticut is on a quest to claim its third consecutive title, a feat that has not been accomplished aside from the UCLA Bruins from 1967 to 73 under legendary coach John Wooden. UConn is currently ranked second nationally and is scheduled to play a tune-up opponent in East Texas A&M before flying down to Hawaii for the Maui Jim Maui Invitational, their first true test of the season. They will open up playing the Memphis Tigers on Monday, November 25th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. On the other side, the UConn women's basketball team, also ranked second nationally, also has high expectations with a loaded roster starring the current projected number one draft pick, Paige Beckers, along with the number one overall recruit in the 2024 class, Sarah Strong. The Huskies have so far delivered on expectations, opening their season with an absolute routing of the Boston University Terriers, the South Florida Bulls, and most recently earning their first ranked win in Greensboro against the number 16 North Carolina Tar Heels. The Huskies will have a rest game against the Fairleigh Dickinson Knights at Gamble Pavilion before they travel to the Bahamas for the Bahamar Women's Championship. They will open up facing the Oregon State Beavers also on Monday, November 25th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be a very fun season in stores as we see two of college basketball's premier programs progress through the season, both with eyes on a national title. Connecticut is the only school to win titles for both men's and women's basketball in the same year, having done so twice in 2004 and 2014. Hopefully, both teams are able to accomplish that feat a third time this season. But that will conclude my UConn Athletics update for today. My name is Nishan Livingston, and thank you for listening. Go Huskies!
From this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or license of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. Today we're going to be featuring a new episode of the award-winning podcast DNA Today, so I hope you all enjoy this new episode.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a multi-award-winning podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, for over a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics in over 200 episodes. For the past 3 years, DNA Today has won the People's Choice Best Science and Medicine Podcast Award. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. In this episode, we're diving into an exciting new career in the genomics field, genomic health analysts. This role is rapidly gaining importance as the demand for interpreting personal genomic data continues to grow, and the healthcare system needs more professionals trained to make this data clinically actionable. I'm thrilled to be joined by Claire Davis and Anna Cantor, co-directors of the new Masters of Science in Genome Health Analysis program, which is a collaboration between NYU Grossman School of Medicine and Sarah Lawrence College. So thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us. Great to be here.
So Claire, tell me a little bit about what the driving force was behind starting this program, because I learned about it somewhat recently and was just really fascinated by it. And I'm like, let's record in person, let's do it. Because as people might know, I graduated from Sarah Lawrence and you were my program director at the time. So this is kind of a pinch me moment to be able to be like sitting across from you, interviewing you about a brand new program.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Really excited to be talking with you about it. Honestly, this has been years in the making. I think for a long time now, we've realized that genomic data is just increasing in magnitude and complexity, like exponentially, right? And so this program is designed to increase the capacity, meaning the number of people who have the expertise to make that real for people, to use genomic data in healthcare to personalize their care over time. And so that's kind of the guiding mission that we were all targeting when we were talking about this program. And to increase capacity, you've got to train more people. And so that's really what we're aiming to do.
Yeah, no, it's a noble feat, I think, just in general, that just training so many people in the genomics workforce and having this relatively new career path. So what type of career paths within this are, I guess, available for students after they graduate? Because I don't even know, like, what does that look like? You graduate, what kind of role does someone have? Anna, can you fill me in a little bit on, like, how that could look for someone?
Absolutely. So we see our GHA students and graduates filling in places in healthcare systems, hospitals, pharmaceutical, as well as genetic testing companies. An example I like to give to students that are interested in this program and kind of want to see that what that looks like is, imagine that a provider sends a genetic testing sample, like a blood sample, to a lab. Usually what that lab does is that they analyze the sample and they give the provider back a genetic test report with an interpretation of the variants that may or may not be clinically relevant. So imagine taking that analysis in-house. So we're getting the genomic data back, and these GHA graduates will be embedded within healthcare systems. So they will have also EHR data, clinically relevant information from specific patients. So they can take all the, or analyze, annotate the relevant variants for that specific person sitting at the doctor's office, combine it with EHR information, and write a very personalized test report back.
And all in-house, like you were saying, that you can have these people on the team that's the part that they're working on, so that it doesn't have to necessarily be sent out for an external third party to figure out, and then you're sending it back. We need more clinical information, the back and forth. I mean, I've been there in terms of being a prenatal genetic counselor. You're sending something in, let's say I'm ordering an amnio, and they're like, well, what are the findings on ultrasound? What are we looking for? Especially if you're ordering like an exome or something like that. So there's a lot of back and forth, and I think that adds to the turnaround time. And in a lot of cases, we want to have those results much quicker, as fast as we can in most cases, right? We're not like, oh, take your time, it's not a stat. Most genetic testing is considered like, we, the clinician and the patient, are like, we want this as soon as possible.
And also, you can imagine that the rates of, or just the frequency of VUSs will go down.
Yeah.
Because we're providing, or the GHA will have that clinical information right in front of them. A lot of people don't send clinical information or family history information to the lab. So the labs are doing the best that they can with the information they have in front of them. But when we have all that data in front of us, we're able to make much more personalized recommendations for patients as well as their families.
Yeah, I think that's so important and exciting to see that this is a newer career path, at least that I hadn't heard of. You know, I'd say before the last year of when you guys started this program, I'm like, what is this? This is so exciting, just to have another type of pathway for people that are interested in genetics, and maybe genetic counseling isn't quite the right fit for them. And they're like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. They're more interested in that data side, the bioinformatics, and that's more their calling. So what I wanted to know is, obviously I'm very familiar with Sarah Lawrence. Why did this collaboration happen? What does each school provide? Why is it such a good meld of the two? Because this could have been different universities. Like, why was this a match?
This is a really great question.
This is a selfish question, because I just want to know, how did this come to be?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of maybe patently obvious when you look at these two different institutions that it's an unlikely friendship, right? So you have a small liberal arts college and this major academic medical center separated by maybe only 25 miles.
But right,
it really feels like worlds apart, right?
And in New York, that's worlds apart. Yes. Yes. People that don't know New York.
Oh, you got to get on a train. Like,
oh,
forget
man.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, you got train, change trains.
Yeah. So I think it's important to recognize, like, NYU is this computational powerhouse. I mean, they are pushing forward. They are asking the right questions. They are singularly focused on how can we get genomic data into healthcare to improve it and to personalize it. And then you have Sarah Lawrence, which, yes, you know, but for those of you who aren't familiar, right? It's this kind of free thinking, very creative, very sort of constructively critical place that has a long-standing history of focusing on humanistic, person-centered models of care. So when you're talking about personalized healthcare, Sarah Lawrence and NYU actually bring together these different but compatible strengths in a way. And that's kind of what we've discovered over the partnership, is that we sort of riff on each other and play back and forth, and there's some really beautiful complementarity there that I think the program has benefited in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think just with Sarah Lawrence, as if people have heard many episodes, they've heard me say this, but that this is where genetic counseling was invented. This is where it was founded. So I think, you know, kind of that phrase, like standing on the shoulders of giants, that's what you guys are able to do with this program, mm-hmm. of taking advantage of how big and how much of a powerhouse NYU is. With all the history and the experience that Sarah Lawrence has, it makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. So I was thinking that's kind of what you would say, but it's good to hear that what I was thinking is true.
Yeah, absolutely.
And from what I understand, this program is broken up into four semesters. You've got classes, you've got some kind of practicum rotations. How does that work? What is the objectives of making sure, like, what kind of classes people are taking, and what do those rotations even look like? Because again, this is a newer area. It's certainly a new career path, but it's not a brand new area, because as we were talking about, Anna, like figuring out and combing through genetic data, we've been doing that for a long time, but to have a career that's dedicated to that subset of genetics is really important. But figuring out, okay, how are we training people to then go into the career path? Mm-hmm. So classes, rotations, what's that looking like?
So the program, the curriculum has really been designed to build on a foundational knowledge, and the curriculum is designed to start with that knowledge and then get much more practical skills based. And so the foundational knowledge that we provide with our students are centered around classes in human genetics, computational genomics, and then in the second year, they have a skills lab where they are working with genomic data sets to annotate, interpret, through different organ systems. And then the practicum is really where we put them and embed them in different working environments that are using genomic data and see where their unique skill set will really lend a hand and allow them to shape these different work environments.
That's so helpful to be able to do that in like a lab kind of setting where you can focus on these skills and start shaping them a little bit and then going into the field and seeing how this actually works. Because otherwise, like, I think I would be intimidated if you're just like, oh, let's throw you in the field without ever trying it out and looking at data sets and everything, because this is big data. I mean, combing through this, it's not like you're just looking at one thing and you're reading it. You're using programs and sorting through and having to prioritize which variants am I looking at over others. So, I mean, that's the extent of what I know about it, at least. But it's a really interesting and growing area in that sense. And so in terms of the classes, where do they actually take the classes? Is it through both universities? Is it through one?
So they're taking classes through both universities.
Interesting.
The degree is culminated in a degree from NYU.
Okay, so that's what they get on their actual, like when they get the degree that they put up on the wall here. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it's an NYU degree. They are taking classes with NYU's bioinformatics students. They're also taking classes with Sarah Lawrence genetic counseling students. And then we have some classes that are unique for the GHA students. And so they're actually really getting a nice balance between the computation classes that currently exist at NYU, the humanistic genetic counseling classes that are offered at Sarah Lawrence, as well, very tailored programming that's just geared towards them.
Right, because it's helpful to understand a lot of the clinical background, because you need to be able to read through and know what's important as you're analyzing the variants and going through the data. So it makes sense you want to have that background. So that's really interesting.
And if I could just add, like, I think it also simulates the kind of interdisciplinarity that they're going to have out in the workforce.
Yeah.
And so it's both that, oh, we can learn these similar skills together, but while we're learning them, we're also practicing how they overlap and sort of come together out in the world. So they get a bigger community that way. It's not just
I was going to say the networking alone. Like, that's one of the reasons I went to Sarah Lawrence, honestly, is because the alumni network is like over 1,000 GCs. And so when I look at different programs and ways I can be involved, I'm like, oh, this is going to allow for me to meet so many people that's going to be helpful in my career. So being able to meet all those different people and, you know, if they're like, oh, I have this pediatric case. Oh, wait, at Sarah Lawrence, I remember one of my classmates ended up going into peds. That's so helpful. Let me send them a text and see if they have info for me. So I think that's just so helpful, too, to just have all those pools of people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And as you were saying, the curriculum covers a lot of these omic technologies. So it really goes deeper into that side. Is there anything else you wanted to comment on in terms of what obviously, like, genomics is what we're focused on, but is there other kind of things that you kind of touch on? Like, I'm thinking like microbiome. Is that something that people are looking at, or am I kind of going more too far into the future?
Well, we're really trying to train our students to be at the forefront of genetics and genomics. We're going to be training them in all the up and coming technologies that are available, because really they have to be the bridge between clinicians who really have limited or lack of training in this field. And so we're really giving them the tools to identify and be familiar with what's coming, how to use this information to really help their patients ultimately.
Yeah.
No, I think we acknowledge that genomics is what's now, but we need to also prepare them for what's next. And it's not necessarily clear what that's going to be. So you've got to survey the landscape. You've got to see what's coming out of these really incredible research centers and see how it might be applying, so that they're anticipating that application as opposed to being reactive to it when they're out in their jobs.
And building skills so that once there are new emerging technologies, they can take those skills and say, oh, I can apply it to this one. Mm-hmm. I think nowadays, with how much we have with AI, I'm sure is going to be a big component with all of this, and already is starting to be, in terms of prioritize these variants for me. What should I start with, mm-hmm. right? Like, we see companies starting to use AI and being able to say, okay, I now have the skills to do this. Mm-hmm. That's so much more important than memorizing something. Yeah. So I think that's more important than ever. Mm-hmm. I think even when we were in school, you had to memorize certain things, right? Yeah. And even students today, but less so than when we were all in school. And that's all different years for us, but yeah. it all applies.
Yeah,
100%.
The students have to actually have a class called, it's like AI in healthcare, something like that. And I'm like, I need to take this too. Yeah. I'm just gonna sit in on this one and see how this plays out, because it's a really important tool that we have to partner with.
Yeah, and just seeing how it does integrate into some of these systems, and especially with the EHRs, EMRs, whatever you wanna call it, the electronic health medical record systems, how does that work in the sense of, do they have their own internal AI that they can use? Because mm-hmm. I think HIPAA ends up being a big concern. You can't just take patient data, throw it into ChatGPT or Gemini or one of these. Mm-hmm. So even just having students learn kind of the ins and outs and the rules when it comes to a lot of that, I think is important.
Absolutely.
For people that are interested in genetics and they're like, I want to do something in this career path, the first thing I remember thinking for myself back 10, 15 years ago was, okay, that must mean I'm working in a lab and I'm working with mice. And I like went to Jackson Laboratories, got a tour there. That was very cool, up in Bar Harbor, Maine. And okay, that's an interesting option. And then I learned about genetic counseling. I'm like, oh, that's talking about genetics. Shocker, I love doing that. So that's what I ended up pursuing. But to me at that time, those are my two options. Now there's a lot more options. So if someone is thinking to themselves right now as they're watching and listening, what are signs that this is the path for them in genetics as opposed to the other paths out there?
Yeah. So first of all, right, if genetics lights you up, you're in the right spot.
Good right.
job.
You found, great start. It's something in here.
You found the right club.
Yeah, and you now found the right podcast.
Exactly. That's totally it. And then the next question is, okay, but like there are also like these sort of affinity groups within the bigger group or community. And so how am I going to target that? We did a lot of this scoping wise when we were first developing the curriculum. You don't want to step on toes or scope of practice of other people who are doing this work. You want to find a way to share the load in a way that's adding as opposed to competing. And so these might feel like generalizations, but I'd love your thoughts on like how true this might be. Genetic counselors love patients. We love talking to people about genetics and family. We love asking questions and taking family histories, right? And so somebody who really wants to do patient care, that's a great path for them. And then you have bioinformaticians. They love computers. They love big data sets. They love crunching this immense amount.
They love creating programs and
I imagine like the Matrix, because it's not my field, but it seems amazing. Exactly.
I dabble and it's tough, so
Exactly. And then you have a great example there. Some people really like bench research. Like you're kind of generating empiric data about how genetics works or mechanisms, etiologies of different illnesses. And so that's another focus. And there are so many others. And then you kind of have a unique mix of skills. And that's what we tried to do with the GHA. We tried to say, you need some computation and you need some clinical interpretation and you need some consultation skills. And so you make this mix, hopefully to be able to like network and connect with these other people to kind of be the glue that holds this workforce together in a way. So if boundary crossing or kind of having this unique and different sort of skill set and trying it out in the world is interesting, I think that's where the GHA might be a really good fit.
And I can even think of people that graduated with a genetic counseling degree that I think maybe retroactively thinking this would have been a better program for them because they went into working at a lot of these genetic testing labs that are doing variant curation and doing aspects there where I'm like, oh, if they could restart, they probably would have chose this program over others because a lot of the genetic counseling programs do have that focus on patient-facing roles. And that's not where we all end up. And it's helpful that there are your program and others out there so that people can focus on what they really want to do because what you're spending your time in the field work and all that, you want it to be the role that you envision and are yearning towards. So I think that's really helpful. And it'll be interesting to see in the long term how it affects the field of people that get hired in these roles at different labs and within hospitals, like you were talking about, if they're more and more of them are going to come from your program as opposed to having genetic counseling degrees, because you're setting them up to be really successful in those roles right off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can think of the GHA as really filling a gap.
It is.
You've got clinicians who are really good with patient care. You've got bioinformaticians who are really good with data. But what genetic counselors are learning on the job.
On the job. We learned a little bit in school. I'm class of 2020. So we learned a little bit, but not as much.
In my year, class of 14, we didn't learn any of this.
Right.
This was really, you know, learning on the job, variant interpretation. And so what these GHAs are doing are bridging the gap between data and patient care.
And labs are going to be so interested in your graduates because they're like, what do you mean we don't have to train them on the job? Like, they're coming already trained. And it's more like, this is the program we use. And then the graduates are going to be like, oh, yeah, all right. So I just do it this way instead. Boom, done.
And it really allows everybody to work at their peak level of expertise, which is really like the...
More efficient.
Absolutely. Icing on the cake.
Yeah. I think this is really going to change how our field operates. And I envision that this program will end up kind of being the one to copy in terms of other programs throughout the country, because you guys can't train everybody. As big as you will become, you can't train everybody in the US and the world. So other programs saying, okay, we really need to step it up and offer this kind of track in terms of that career path. So, I mean, thank you ahead of time for training all these people and helping all the patients, but the labs too. Like, how much money are they going to save on training? My goodness, you guys are doing it for them. So yeah, that's wonderful. So at this point, a lot of listeners are very interested. They're like, okay, I want to go into genetics. And they're like, I'm not sure which area. And now they're listening to this like, well, I should throw my hat in the ring. I should see if I can get into this program. So for people interested in applying, what do you want them to emphasize in their application? And even, I guess, before the application, of what kind of experience should they have going into it? Because I think there's a lot of resources out there for other fields in genetics to know, oh, I should get this kind of experience and that kind of experience. For this, it's a newer area, so it's hard to be like, oh, I've shadowed someone or I've done an internship. So what other aspects are you going to be looking for people to maybe bolster right now?
Yeah, so I can think of three things.
Okay, so let's list them out, three things.
We're gonna list these out because that's gonna be fun. Okay, so the first thing is a little bit boring, but it's just, have they had some academic preparation in genetics, statistics, and computer programming? Literally, I'm not talking about having a degree in these things, just have been taken a class on it. The second thing I would say is describing an interest in genetics and healthcare in the personal statement. And this is, how do you see these things coming together? Which particular part of their intersection are you interested in? How does it kind of light you up and get you excited? Because we're pretty excited about it. And so
yeah,
we
can you tell? I'm excited about it. Can I be a student?
We'll be looking for your application.
Yes, yes.
And then the third thing is a little bit more amorphous. It's kind of more of like a mindset. It's somebody who's really sort of has an affinity for complexity and ambiguity, and also for collaboration. This is, as you said, right, it is new. And so we're continuing to improve upon it, critique it, ask questions, move it forward. And we need the students to be open about their experience so that we can work together to make it better. And so it's this idea of somebody who's gonna jump in, give it a try, and keep going with us.
And it's exciting to be one of the first students because you really get to have a long-lasting legacy. Wow, say that three times fast. That should be the tagline. Be part of the long-lasting legacy. Because you get to give the program feedback and you get to really be a part of forming it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so exciting too, to be able to be the first. And then, you know, when you have alumni, like, oh, you were one of the first classes. So mm-hmm. I think that's just such a thrilling aspect to apply for this cycle. So that's just really, really great to be able to think about it that way. And from what I understand, the deadline for the priority application is January 31st. And that's for the next academic year. So 2025 into 2026. And then you have rolling admissions after that. So it's like great to apply by then because you get that priority. So what else, I guess, is there going to be a statement of purpose? Like, what are the other aspects of the application? Anna, can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So there's two recommendation letters that we request, as well as a personal statement. And this is where the students really get to shine. They get to really speak to their experience and their interest. What gaps have they observed, or where do they think that they can fit into this new field? And this is where we really are looking for people who have that ambition, that problem solving, where they see themselves really being trailblazers in a new field.
You need to be in this field. Yeah.
100%. And so, like you said, we have a really great connection with our students because we're looking for that continuous feedback. So we are looking for those students that are willing to give us their honest opinion, explore new things. And so these are the types of students that we're looking for right now.
Yeah, no, that's fabulous. I think it's really exciting just to see how this is taking off. What other aspects are you just really excited about the program and maybe even just the future of as it builds up more?
That's such a great question.
I have to think about it because there's so much happening in my brain at once. Yeah.
100%.
I would say the thing that excites me most is that we're really trying to change healthcare. And I know that sounds idealistic, but you've got to like follow a dream, right?
Yeah.
And so our scope is not small. It's not, yeah, just come and do things the way they've always been done. It's literally, no, make personalized healthcare more accessible for everyone, because we know that's what genomic data can do. We just need more people who can help make that happen. And so that's literally it. Let's make the world different in that way and help people be healthier and live longer and have families. It's just kind of the big picture.
And absolutely. Now is a good time, I think, for this to be launching, because we've gotten to this point, as we've seen over the last 20, 30 years, at least I have from reading historical books and things like that, not Jennifer Aniston over here, but looking at that, because the cost of sequencing is so low now compared to what it was like, you know, whatever, $1 billion with the Human Genome Project, and it's just been steadily declining. Now we can have a lot more people have this be accessible. And with that, we need a lot more people to be able to analyze all of this data. And I think I'd be remiss if we didn't bring up the topic that there is this disparity in genomic health data where our field is very European based. So that's the genomes that we started with. And we need to be able to have a lot more of that. Is that something that you're thinking about heading into this program? And obviously you're not the ones that are collecting data, but you're the ones analyzing data. So it's like you're on the second step of that. But from your perspectives, obviously we've been chipping away at this. I wish it would move faster than it is, mm-hmm. but I'm impatient with a lot of things of progress. Any thoughts on that? Of just like how we're continuing to really be able to make it more equitable in that way?
I think that's the idea.
Yeah.
So when you're working with individualized data, as opposed to having eligibility criteria for a study that like sort of targets a particular population, you're going straight to the person. And in theory, you're lowering the barriers for people to get that kind of interpretation and that kind of support for applying it to their care. And so at scale, right, it's an all-comers approach. There's no gate there that sort of determines who comes through, and hopefully that accumulates into reducing disparities.
Yeah, and when you think about where these graduates will end up, you know, if they're embedded into healthcare systems, they're not dealing with the patients directly, they're just dealing with the data. And so they can proactively even identify patients that may benefit from these personalized recommendations that they're able to generate and collect, because they're going to be able to understand the clinical side of things, but as well the genomic data side of things. And so when you remove the patient and the eligibility criteria, and you have people embedded in these health networks, I think you're just going to see that it's going to be way more.
It'll just naturally happen if they're already working in these systems. And I think projects like the Pan Genome Project, All of Us, like that is helping us just in our field, not even in just the US, but in other countries as well.
That's a great analogy, actually. And still to think about, though, right? Those are incredible research studies, All of Us, for instance. And that's a nice way to kind of get in. It's still another step. We really want to see the genome health analysts in primary care settings, for instance. You're meeting them right where people are, where they're coming to healthcare, where they're seeking out support related to just their overall health. And so I think that's another piece of it. We have a really strong clinical focus. It's very important that we keep the patient or the client right close to the learning that they're doing, because we want them working much closer to people and the population.
And seeing the impact they have, right? Because that's if you it. Have a file that you open, you're working on, but remembering there is a person behind that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you're not direct patient-facing roles in healthcare, sometimes that feels a little like, you know, it's someone, but it's more abstract.
Yeah.
But being able to integrate that into your program and having that mindset there is like you're working on this and you're going to help this person and their family. And it's that ripple effect.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
really it.
Yeah. Well, anything you want to leave our viewers and listeners with? Because, yeah, if I wasn't already a genetic counselor, I'd be considering this. If you had like a part time option and I could do over 10 years, you know, something like that, maybe I could swing. But anything else you wanted to mention?
I think, you know, a lot of the interest that we're getting is just kind of natural interest. People are coming across our website, our contact information, and we really welcome all interests in the program. We're very receptive to emails. I'm happy to answer emails, phone calls, Zooms, because we're trying to get word out there that this is a new project and people have questions and we're happy to answer them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, check us out on our website. And
yep, we'll link to all of that in the show notes. So just pop over to that or go to dnatoday.com. It's right there for you.
Yeah. And you can send us an email. We're happy to answer your questions.
Yeah. And make sure you get your applications, I recommend, by January 31st. So your priority. But if the holidays and life gets in the way, you can still rolling a mission after that. So yeah. Well, thank you both so much for coming on, being in person. This is very exciting. And I just can't wait to get an update from you of just how things are going and where students are working and, you know, talking more about just like how the program is going. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
So fun. Thank you.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnatoday.com, where you can also stream all 200 plus episodes of the show, including video versions of interviews recorded in 2021 or later. Any questions, episode ideas, guest pitches, or sponsor inquiries can be sent into info@dnatoday.com. Be sure to follow us on social media, especially so you don't miss a giveaway. We are at DNA Today Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and more. Please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. Here's a bonus. If you do and send us a screenshot, I'll give you a shout out on the show. DNA Today is created, hosted, and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our team includes communications lead, Corinne Merlino, video lead, Amanda Andrioli, outreach intern, Sonia Tanaker, social media intern, Kajal Patel, and graphic designer, Ashlyn Anokian. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, they're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Thank you all so much for tuning in this morning. Thank you to our news partners, The Daily Campus, UConn Student Newspaper, and UCTV, UConn Student Television Station. A special thanks to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I'm Katie Service, and you have been listening to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Catch you next week, Husky Nation.